Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You're listening to the Sitting in the Park show. Today, it's going to be a very special show because we have a famous Chicago group, The Notations, up in here right now. So I don't know if you guys want to introduce yourselves.
Yeah.
I'm Bobby Thomas.
I'm Clifford Curry.
And I'm Marcus Gentry.
Okay, and currently you guys also have one more member who we probably couldn't fit in here.
Right, that's true. That's Michael Thurman.
Okay, so first of all, I want to say thanks so much for you guys coming up here and telling your story. And I guess what we usually do when I do interviews is we go chronologically and tell sort of the story of the group, how they formed, play the records and tell the stories behind the records. So first of all, the only original member of the group that's up here right now is Cliff, right?
Original, yes.
Yeah, because the group has a long history, so there's definitely, like, Bobby was on a lot of the records, too.
Exactly.
So I was wondering, first of all, if you could tell what part of Chicago the group was from originally.
Well, Southside.
Okay. Around what area?
I grew up in Englewood.
Okay.
That's where it all started. Okay. And I went to Parker High School, which is now Roberson.
Okay. So, and actually, did you guys form when you were in high school?
In high school, yeah. We had a couple of different names, and you know, you finally latch on to one you like.
Okay. But I understand you were also in the Chicago group, The Accents, right?
That was just a short, brief, you know, two-record thing there with them.
Okay.
And they were older guys, older than me. I was about 16 at the time.
So you were in high school when you were with them.
Exactly.
And you were at the Notations, with the Notations at the same time,
exactly.
Right? Exactly. Yeah, like if people don't remember, The Accents are the group who had their big hit with New Girl in the Neighborhood, and they also had Enchanted Garden. So you already had experience with even two groups at the same time.
Exactly.
So how did you get hooked up with them, actually, like? You just knew
just
that?
Through meeting people, and you know people, and they were looking for someone at that time to record with them, and I did.
Okay, but then you were actually with what you formed the Notations, like right when you started high school, around the same time when you were 16?
I would say about the third year.
Okay.
In high school, about the third year.
So were the people in the Notations, they all go to your school?
No.
Okay.
Two of us, the original two members, LaSalle Matthews, who's passed away now, and myself. We were the original two. And then from that, we picked up James Stroud, who at that time was going to Dunbar.
Okay. And there were four original members?
No, there was actually three.
There were three original members.
Actually three.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you guys formed when, around 1965, around that time?
A little before that.
Okay.
Just a little.
Okay, so you guys... Sort of, how did you guys form, actually? You just knew each other, sort of seeing?
LaSalle and I went to grammar school and high school together, so we were always together.
Okay.
And from that, we met Jimmy through other people. You know, you're looking for singers, and people say, hey, check out songs and songs, and that's how we met him.
How'd you get started singing, actually?
Oh, goodness. Church, we did church, just around the house, talent shows, as many as we could do, even in grammar school.
Okay.
And it's always been something that, you know, I wanted to do, and...
What were the parts that the original group members sang?
Oh, we had, it was three-part harmony. We had first, second.
Okay.
Baritone.
Okay, what part were you?
Did a little second, baritone.
Okay.
High baritone.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so.
And lead.
Okay. So you guys were together for about, I guess, 5 years before you actually recorded anything.
As the Notation?
Yeah.
Yes. The actual recording happened in... I'd say...
I think 69 was your first record.
Yeah, 69, early 70. 69, early 70.
So your first record, actually, it was very obscure. It was a record called Trying My Best to Find Her.
Yeah.
And on a Chicago label called Tad, which is owned by a guy named Gene Cash.
Right.
So how'd you get hooked up with actually recording something?
Again, we saw an ad.
Okay.
And they were looking for artists. And we went out there, met him. And we right after that, this following week, we went in and recorded the material. We already had the material ready. And we just went right in about a week after we had met him and just recorded.
So, but before you actually recorded, you were just doing shows and...
Talent shows, anything we could do.
Okay. but the record you recorded, it was... You wrote the songs, is that right?
Yes.
So was it the first sort of songs that you wrote that you actually recorded and performed pretty much? Or were you already writing other songs by then?
I was writing, but I would say that those would be the first. that I was involved in. I'm sure he would be the first big one.
Yeah. So I don't have I would play the Tad record if I had it, but I don't have it. So I know you have a lot of stories specifically about I'm Still Here, but I'll play the record first, and then we can tell the story behind
it.
So I'm sure everybody remembers this because it was a huge hit in Chicago. Around 1970, is that right, when it came out?
Or? Yeah, August 28th, 1970.
Okay, you remember exactly when it broke.
That's when it hit. That's when it hit the radio station.
Okay, well, I'm going to play the record, and then we can talk more about the story.
Okay.
Okay, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Sitting in the Park show, and we're doing a special interview today with the Notations, so very special guests up in here today. That was just your guys' first huge hit from 1970. That was I'm Still Here. And we were just talking about how before that, you know, you guys had been around for a while, like since even maybe 64, 65, and that was your first, you know, really successful record. So I was wondering, I know you got a lot of stories behind that one record, so I was wondering if you could start talking about sort of how first of all you got hooked up with that record. Was actually released on a record label called Twinight, which was, it was like Phil Wright and Howard Bednose labels. Is that right?
That was Peter Wright.
Oh, Peter Wright, I'm sorry.
You kill me if I get it wrong.
Okay.
Peter Wright and Howard Bednose, yes.
And I guess the other big group, they put out a lot of stuff, but also Syl Johnson was one of the major recording artists on the label.
Exactly.
And so how did you get hooked up, first of all, with the record label and get an opportunity to record that record?
Well, it's the kind of like a usual story. We had been doing a lot of talent shows and doing shows around the town, and Phil Johnson was very popular at that time, and we did a little fill-in gig with him, and he heard the group, he liked us, he approached us, gave us his car, told us he was interested in recording us. And it took about 3 weeks before he finally made it to one of our rehearsals. He did, and he asked us to meet him at Twinight Records. At that time, Twinight was located at 166 East Superior, right downtown here. And we met him that Monday, and we met Pete and Howard, and they had a nice label, of nice Chicago label at the time. It was Phil Johnson, the Dynamic Tents. Alvin Spencer was on that label at the time, and Ronaldo Domino,
yeah.
And that was the label, actually, at that time. And we got the contracts, looked them over, signed, and about no more than a month later, we were in the studio recording.
Okay, and one thing about it, most of the songs, you wrote almost all the records, right? Like, I see your name at the writing credits on most of them, and then another name that's on a lot of the records is Brad Bobo.
Right.
So if you could talk about who that is.
Sure. Brad, at that time, he was a young guy, just graduated from Lynn Bloom High School here in Chicago. And Brad was a guitar player. Excellent. And Brad and I hooked up. As a matter of fact, we used to rehearse at his house in his mom's basement. That was our main rehearsal spot. And we hooked up, and Brad stayed with us for quite a while, until he was almost out of high school, and he was almost about 20 before Brad finally branched off. But yes, Brad was the main person. I needed a little hook on I'm Still Here, and he's the young man that came up with the dun 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 dun. He came up with that.
the guitar riff at
exactly.
The beginning.
Exactly.
So you already had the song written, and then you needed to finish it somehow, and he sort of finished it for you with
that hook. Needed that hook, and Brad gave us just what we wanted.
Okay. I think we'll talk a little bit more about sort of the recording sessions of these Twinette records after. I'll play the other side of I'm Still Here, which is another real nice up-tempo record called I Can't Stop. So here it is, and then we'll talk some more.
Like the shining sun, you brighten up my way. Girl, I really need you, so this I want.
Okay, we're back here in the studio with the Notations, talking about their records. That was just the B-side of your first big hit, I'm Still Here. That was called I Can't Stop. So there's a lot more story, I guess, behind I'm Still Here that we didn't get to. So I guess one thing that you always wonder about is that the hook to that song is really the yelping thing that you do with your voice on the right. Like, to me, that's what makes the record so good. So there's a story behind that, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, when I initially did the song, it really wasn't for me to do lead on. I wrote it for Jimmy.
Okay.
Lead on, James Stroud. And when we got in the studio and they laid the music down and get the background, and James went out to do the lead, so he did the lead, did a very good job. Well, Sil was the producer at the time, and he wasn't happy with the lead. He felt that Jimmy sounded a little too much like Smokey Robinson, and he wanted the group to be original, more original sounding. So he called us in, we sit and listen to it, and he asked me at that point, could I do lead on the tune? And I said, yeah. And so he ran off a copy for me. About a week and a half to 2 weeks later, I went in, and when I was rehearsing at home, the little sound that you hear that I threw in there, that was just something I was doing at home when I was rehearsing. It had no intentions, really, of putting that in there. When we go back in to record, that's when I did it just as I had rehearsed it. And after the first take, I told Sil to run the tape back, but I didn't really want to keep that in the song. He says, no. He says, we're going to keep that. I said, no, Sil, come on, please take it. I really wanted it out of there. And by him being the head producer at that time, he said, come in, take a listen. We did. He said, now the group sounds like an original group. You don't sound like anybody else out there. And this is what I was looking for. And it stayed in the song. And thanks to today. We're glad now that it's staying in the song. Yeah.
Well, I think it became one of the hooks of your group. Like, it's on a bunch of other songs.
Exactly.
That vocal.
Exactly.
That
kind
vocal
of my
trick.
Little trick that I do.
Yeah, and I just want to say, like, that record, that's one of the things that sort of got me into collecting this kind of music, actually. Like, because I started collecting maybe about, like, 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was buying, like, standard soul funk type stuff. Mm-hmm. But then finding a record like that has a real, like, Chicago kind of sound, you know, and a real just... It's just a really, I don't know, just the sound of it sort of made me want to find other records that sounded like that. So I just want to thank you for recording a record like that. It sort of got me specifically into this kind of music.
Well, I want to thank everybody that went out and bought it. Because I'll tell you a little quick story. We almost lost the record. It almost became what you call the turntable hit in Chicago. It was getting a lot of airplay. WVON at the time was the station, and was getting a lot of airplay, but nobody was really running out to buy it in the first 8 weeks, and we were very low in sales. And Pete called a meeting on a Monday morning, and he wanted to pull it off and go with another single, but we were doing fine in other areas, you know, New York, New Jersey area, you know, St. Louis, Detroit. And just as we were having a meeting that Monday morning, he got a call from the distributor, and the distributor told him, no, so I don't think you should pull that record. Not just yet. Well, it had been out there about 6 to 8 weeks already. Mm-hmm. And in a major market like Chicago, 16,700 records, that's no records. Sold.
Yeah.
And from that Monday to the following Tuesday, we end up selling something close to 80,000 records in Chicago, and it just went after that.
Yeah, that actually it became a national hit. I looked it up, and you charted in Billboard, you charted 26, which is very high.
Very.
And I think the date you entered was actually December 15th, 1970. So it was a while before the record was actually cut, like in August.
Right.
Or released in August it took like half a year before it became a national hit. But then I think it was on the chart for a while, so definitely you got national. And actually all of that was the last Twinette record you had that charted Billboard nationally. But then all the records we'll talk about later, all the ones on Gemigo, actually, they all charted nationally.
Mm-hmm.
So, but your other Twinette records are all really good. So I think we'll play at least a few more of them.
Okay.
This next record is the follow up to I'm Still Here, and both sides of this record are really good. First, I guess we'll play the A side, and it's called It's a New Day.
Everywhere people stand,
Okay, we're doing an interview here with the Notations. That was just their second record. It's a New Day. And I actually played, I guess that was actually the B side of the record. I guess the A side is actually At the Crossroad, which is also a really nice cut, which I'll play next. But that record was another record written by Brad Bobo. And you said it was arranged by Floyd Morris, right? And you said the first record that I'm Still Here got played in Chicago. You were saying it was on number one at WVON, right?
Yes, we were number one 2 solid weeks at WVON, which is equivalent to now GCI. And it was 2 weeks we were number one on that station. And one of the, they told us, one of the most requested records
okay.
on that station at that time period.
And you said the other two Twinette records, the At the Crossroads and I've Been Trying also got play on VON also,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely.
And were they all recorded in the same session, or?
I'm Still Here. Yes, everything was did at the same time. At the Crossroads, we did it a little later.
Okay.
Not much, but a little later. But everything else was did during the same session.
Okay, and at the time, you were telling me earlier, actually, that the musicians who were playing on the record were actually Syl Johnson's group, The Pieces of Peace, right?
Yeah, we had on drums, on I'm Still Here, was Freddie White, which is the brother to Maurice White.
Okay.
We had Bernard Reed on bass, of course, Brad Bobo on guitar, and we also had, I wanted to say Phil Upchurch, but it wasn't Phil. Forget the other gentleman's name. He slips my mind. But it was only like 4 pieces on the session.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, so, and there were three members in the group at the time singing,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Okay, so I'm going to play the other side At the Crossroads, which is another really nice side, so here it is.
Hey, your girl just walked by, held in the arms of another guy, and I'd like to know. To say, I know he's
to make you feel so tough. You took advantage of her love, made her feel very small. You can say my love isn't real, that is just a disguise. But I love her so much, love. Sometimes it makes me cry. We're standing at the crossroads.
The red light
won't stop me.
The yellow
might make her cautious of my love.
The green light will show her.
Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You're listening to the Sitting in the Park show, and today we're doing a very special interview with the Notations, legendary Chicago group. we just got through a couple of your early records. That was At the Crossroads, a follow-up to I'm Still Here. Mm-hmm. And you guys had a national hit at that point. So did you guys start doing like touring or doing shows elsewhere at that point, or...?
We still did a lot of local shows, and also things picked up where, yes, we started getting out doing national things, St. Louis, Detroit, Philadelphia, Baltimore. We did the circuit just like all the other acts did during the 70s because we got hotter, and as time went on, more work came in.
Okay. Did you have any, like, choreography, or were you...
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay.
You know, you come up with things of your own, and you also do... I think there's not a group out here that hasn't taken a little something from the Temptations. I think they were the leaders in the choreography, and all the groups might have took a little something from them, but you tried to incorporate some of your own into that. Oh, absolutely. Choreography was a very, very important part.
What were some of the big, do you remember any of the big shows you did or the big groups you played with?
Well, I remember this. The first big show that we did here in Chicago was at the Auditorium Theater.
Okay.
And that was the Staple Singers, Jackie Wilson, us, and it was two acts on the show. And they set my man, but Jackie Wilson and the Staple Singers and us were on that show. That was the first big show that we did here in Chicago.
Okay, and maybe this is actually later, but I remember when I was talking to you earlier, you were telling me that you actually had a band that was your touring group. Is that right?
Yeah, we had a band. The first band that we... The first band that we actually took on the road with us was a band. They were out of Chicago. They were all young guys. And they were called the Weapons of Peace.
Okay.
And in that band, there was a gentleman who now has gone on to be a pretty famous comedian. His name was Finus Henderson Jr. And he was like the lead singer for the band and also the comedian for the band. And everything was a tremendous band. They were all young guys. And their first time going out of the city of Chicago was with the Notations. And they stayed with us about... It had to be at least 6-7 years.
So how did you get hooked up with them? You just they were performing and you saw them and you're like, you want to go on tour with us or what?
No, before we actually saw them, it's all about networking and meeting people.
Okay,
you meet people, someone introduce you to someone else, and that's basically how we met. And we met Finus first.
Okay,
and then he mentioned that he was singing with the band, and we went down to hear them rehearse. We liked them right off the bat, and talked with them, and we took them in as our band.
Okay, cool. So, and then they were touring. It's interesting because they didn't actually ever record probably until they stopped being your band.
Yeah, and then like they started doing some things on their own.
Yeah, they started recording in the like late like 76, I think, their first record.
76, 77.
Like they were on Playboy Records.
Right,
at that point.
Right.
So, I'm going to play your last record that got released on Twinet, and this also got played in Chicago. This is a cover of an Impression song. This is I've Been Trying.
baby. Yet I can understand why. Can I be your ordinary man? Day after day, you treat me in your way.
Okay, that was just the Notations with their version of the Impression song, I'm Still Trying. And you actually knew Curtis Mayfield at the time, is that right?
Absolutely, yes, we did.
So what did you just decide to record a song, or do you tell him you're going to record the song? Or
no, we didn't actually tell him. What it was that we used to do that song on shows.
Okay.
As a fill-in song, and we liked it, Phil liked it, and he thought that we should go in and record it, and we did.
Okay.
And Curtis liked it also after he heard it.
Okay. So, and what, you just knew him because everybody knew Curtis, is that right? Or
well, again, you know, in Chicago, and at that time period, Chicago was like a New York or L.A. It was the capital for just about all the record labels.
Yeah.
And, absolutely.
And okay.
Curtis was just one of the nicest guys that you ever would want to meet, and he was very helpful in a lot of ways to the group, to me individually, and... He loved the song. So it was a privilege to do anything that Curtis wrote was a privilege, and that's one of the ones that we chose to record.
Yeah, he never really wrote a bad song. He wrote a lot of songs.
No, so. I totally agree with that.
So I guess what I'm interested in talking about what happened after Twinight. You went back to, first of all, there were a couple years where you didn't record anything. I guess Twinight had gone out of business, right?
Twinight had dissolved.
Okay.
And it went as far as it could go. We left a little before it actually dissolved totally because the promotion had stopped, you know, in terms of what we felt should be. And we left.
Okay.
And a little after that, then the whole company just went under.
Okay. And later you got hooked up with Gene Cash again and his record labels.
For a very short time.
And he released a couple records on you on his labels Cash and CRA. And he was based out in Maywood, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess there were about 2 years before you got back with his label. What were you doing? You were just performing and doing shows and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, we were working and keeping ourselves together with fresh material to be ready.
Okay.
And we just worked.
So, and were there any clubs that you regularly played in Chicago?
Oh, absolutely. At that time, we had one of the number one spots at that time was the High Chaparral. It used to be on 79th and Stony Island.
Yeah.
We also had the Guys and Gals. It was on 69th and Pure. These were big clubs at that time. The Guys and Gals was a club where the Jackson 5, when they were little, used to come there every weekend and perform. A lot of people don't know that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So eventually, when you got hooked up with Cash Records, you had an extra member in your group, right?
Yes.
Someone you were telling me because I see his name on the writing credits of this your first record in this label, is Santos Dominguez. Is that right?
Yes, Santos. Well, let's start here. After a period of time, we worked, traveled. Jimmy decided that he wanted to move on to other things. So we had to find a replacement.
Like he wanted to stop doing music?
Exactly.
Okay.
And what he did was he stayed with the group until we found the replacement. And we did a show on 18th and Racine at a Catholic church. It was in the gymnasium there. Called, I think it was St. Procopius was the church. That's what it was. And we met Santos was playing with a band, and the name still slips me, but I'm going to get that.
Yeah, because I really want to find out what group he was in.
Yeah, and he was the lead singer for this band, tremendous band. And Jimmy heard him before we did. And
okay.
He says, Cliff, come out and take a listen to this guy. And we did, and he was tremendous. And so we talked to him, and he was like, he jumped for the chance, and he got in the group. And he was a writer also. Very good writer, and but Santos never stayed with us long enough to actually move on to the next level.
Okay.
So he was there for a short period of time, but it was a great short period of time that he was there with the group. He brought a lot to the group.
So I'm looking at the writing credits of this this record, and it's you, Dominguez, Brad Bobo, and there's a Long. Who's the Long?
It was a young lady named Terry.
Okay. Okay, so I'll play both sides of this record are really good. Maybe I'll play one, and then if we have time at the end, play the other side. I'm not.
Okay.
But this is called What More Can I Say? Okay, that was just the notations with What More Can I Say, a really nice cut, released, I think, in 1973. Is that probably around that time?
That's right.
And that was on CRA, which is one of Gene Cash's record labels. And he didn't really I think it probably could have been a hit if it got promotion and stuff, but it didn't. It didn't really get.
No, he didn't really promote it like it should have been, and it would have been a bigger record.
And he actually, most of the records he put out weren't even soul records, right? Like he was kind of like I think he put out a lot of country records and stuff on his label. Like he was kind of dabbling in different.
Actually, to tell you the truth, you're right. We were the first, maybe second.
Yeah, he put out another singer named like Harold Currington was
exactly.
The name of the guy, but
his thing was mainly country western.
Yeah, so he was just kind of trying to do something else, so mm-hmm. You didn't really get the promotion that...
Exactly.
And this second record, I'll play the second record that was on the label, but this one is even more obscure than that first, like even harder to find than the first record. This track is called I Don't Want to Be Late. Okay, we're back up here talking to the Notations. That was just the last record you released on Gene Cash's label, probably around maybe 73, 74. That was called I Don't Want to Be Late. And you were saying you thought maybe Tom Washington did the strings on that record?
It's been a long time, but I really think Tom did the strings on it.
Okay, so after this record came out, there was maybe a little bit of time, but then you sort of entered a new phase of the group. And I guess you got signed to a major record label, and Bobby Thomas, who's in here now, joined the group, right?
Yeah, we're on the right track.
Okay, so
I'm trying to think as we go. It has been a while. I'm trying to think: are we missing something before?
Well, we got all the records in.
Okay,
but I'm. So, what's the story behind like the lineup change and sort of how you got signed to a major label? You got signed to Gemigo Records, which was, I guess, like a division of Kurtom, right?
Okay, Gemigo was a division label of Kurtom. Kurtom Records was the major label. Well, how that came about was that we met a gentleman named Emmett Gardner, and Emmett was a promotion man, one of the best in the business at that time. And Emmett was working for a couple of labels doing independent promotions, and Kurtom just happened to be one of these labels. And they had moved out of 5915 North Lincoln in Lincolnwood, and that was the big setup, the big studio and everything. And so one thing led to another, and Emmett got us an audition, and we went out to do this audition, and of course it went well, and we got signed.
Okay, so you were auditioning. Who did you audition for?
Well, we auditioned for Curtis.
Okay, so Curtis.
Well, as a matter of fact, it was Curtis, a gentleman named Rich Tufo, who was the arranger at the time for the label, and there was a few other people there. And what we did was something a little different. We did a complete, we went in and actually did a live show type thing.
Okay, yeah. Then, if the listeners don't know, Kurtom was Curtis Mayfield's record label, pretty much, right?
Exactly.
Like it was I guess it was distributed by Buddha Records at the time.
Exactly.
But,
and then also, Warner Brothers picked him up a little later.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So that guy Emmett Gardner hooked you up with the audition.
Absolutely.
So at the time, had Bobby joined the group yet?
Yeah, I was in the group at that time.
So how did you get hooked up with the group?
Through Emmett Gardner again.
Okay. So what did that Santos Dominguez, did he leave the group before? What happened?
He was gone.
Santos was gone.
Okay, so you only had two people and you needed a replacement. Is that right? What happened? Or
exactly.
And Emmett hooked Bobby up with the group.
Correct.
So and Bobby was actually in another Chicago group called Channel 3 that had a song called Sweetest Thing, right?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. So I guess maybe even another time, maybe over the phone or something, we could talk about just the story behind that group. It's probably not a 90-minute story, but it's probably worth getting. Probably worth telling either way. But so how did you get Channel 3? Had they broken up at the time, or you left the group and that to join the Notations? Or
no, what? Channel 3 had broken up at the time.
Okay.
And the Notations were looking for another singer, and through Emmett Garner, he put us both together. And it worked out fine.
Walter.
And let's see, Walter Jones. Walter came into the group about a year later.
Okay, so
exactly right.
So you still hadn't recorded anything on Gemigo yet, right? Before Walter joined.
No.
And Walter was in another Chicago group, the Five Crowns, right? The group where they hit Just a Part of Life.
Mm-hmm.
So. So two people from other groups joined the Notation. So and you guys previously were always a three-member group, and now you became a four-member group.
Exactly.
All of a sudden, right?
Exactly.
Is there a reason for the change? Like you joined before Walter joined, right?
Yes.
So were you actively looking for a fourth person because you wanted to change the sound a little bit, or what happened?
Actually, we were looking for another voice. It didn't necessarily have to be that we were looking for four.
Okay.
The person, his voice, he fit, and it was what we were looking for, and he was in. When Walter came along a little while after, it fit.
Okay.
So we brought it in, and that's what made the sweet combination that we had when we were at Kurtom Records.
Okay. So, and he just, you were just looking for somebody, and Emmett hooked you up with him, and you guys,
exactly.
You guys started rehearsing together, and it clicked. Is that
and these were all voices. These both the voices were voices that brought a lot to the Notations and a different sound for what we had from the I'm Still Here days. But it was fresh, and it was what we needed.
Okay, so Curtis, so you auditioned for Curtom. They were just looking for acts for their label.
Exactly.
And they liked you, and they signed a contract, right?
Right away.
So that was around 1974, 75?
About 74.
Okay. And the first record you released on Gemigo Records, actually it became a big hit. It was called It Only Hurts for a Little While. And you were telling me there's some story behind the song, like the guy who wrote the song, right?
Well, the gentleman who actually put that song together, partially, it was like a poem, really.
Okay.
And so Bobby came to me and said, there's this guy named Howard. It's got, he wouldn't know whether to say it was a song or a poem, but it actually was a poem because there was a lot to it. So we kind of like just took it. And we started looking it over, and Bobby looked over half, I looked over half, and pulled things together out of it to really place it and structure it as a song.
Okay.
And the title was the same, It Only Hurts for a Little While. That was always the title. And from there, we took it, put
it together. What was the name of the guy that wrote the...
Howard Sandiford.
Okay. So I'll play the record, and we'll talk a little bit more about it. But this was actually, this became a big hit for you too.
Absolutely.
I wrote down, I looked it up, then it charted nationally on the Billboard. In March 22nd, 75 is when it hit, and it got up to number 27, which is almost as high as I'm Still Here.
Exactly.
So here's the record. Okay, that was just the Notations, which their first big hit after they signed to Gemigo Records. And that was a big hit in March of 1975. That track was called It Only Hurts for a Little While.
Correct.
And when that record came out, actually, you guys switched the leads of the records, right? Because you Cliff, used to do the leads, but then Bobby took over. Is that right?
Exactly. We were always pretty much have been the type of group that it didn't matter who did leads. We were looking for the best job on the song.
Okay.
And at that time, Bobby had what we needed for those particular songs, and that's the way it came out, and we were happy.
Okay. I was telling you, I met another guy, I think he was in your band, named Larry.
Yeah, Larry Morrison.
A long time ago. Yeah. And he was saying that people liked Bobby's voice because it sounded sort of like Felipe Wynn, who was really big at the time. So I hope that's... It's not an insult, right?
Oh, no, it's not.
Oh, okay, well, but you guys were still doing shows at the time, and did you record all the Gemigo stuff at the same time, or you record? What was the story there?
Yeah, we spent the night in the studio.
Oh, many a night. We were there 2, 3 in the morning, and a couple of times 4, 5 in the morning, and it took a little time, but you know, it was all fun.
Okay,
it was all fun. Tired, yes, but it was fun. It was all worth it in the end. So pretty much everything was did for that album at the same time.
Yeah, I want to talk about maybe toward the end of the interview the B side of that record, because the B side was a song called Super People, which sort of got lost. It didn't even make the album. It was the B side of that single, but then it became very collectible in the 90s. But we'll talk about that after I play some of the Gemigo songs. This next record I'm going to play was your second hit on Gemigo Records. This charted in August of 75. I think it went low on the Billboard charts, like only like 93. But you were telling me it was a big local hit in different places, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a hit. Like Portland, Oregon, we were number one. New York area. We had some top fives on this in quite a few areas.
Okay. So, and you were telling me that you think this was big just because disco was breaking and this had sort of a disco
sound.
Absolutely.
It was a strong song at that time. And we also, I think all artists in the 70s had certain areas that was just their area.
Okay.
And we had a stronghold like Detroit, New York, Philly. Those were some strong areas for us.
Okay. So I'll play the record and then we'll talk some more. So this is Think Before You Stop.
Stop and think about it before you stop. Hey, man, stop all over again.
Okay, that was just the Notations with their second big hit on Jimmy Go Records. That was called Think Before You Stop. And I was wondering if you could talk about some of the other, there were a bunch of other artists around that time recording on Kurt Tom Records and Jimmy Go Records, and you knew them all and worked with them, right?
Absolutely. At that time period, Kurt Tom was about to be as large as Motown was in Detroit. We had the Natural Four. It was us. We had the Jones Girls, Rasputin Stash, Leroy Hudson, of course, Curtis, the Impressions. It was a large stable of artists there, all outstanding artists. And the musicians that played pretty much on all of the Kurt Tom stuff, including our album, was Curtis's major band, which was Master Henry Gibson on percussions. You had Lucky Scott on bass. Donnell Haygood on drums. These were Tennyson Stevens keyboard, Rich Twofold keyboards. These were mainly Curtis's guys that played pretty much on everything that we did. Philip Church.
Yeah, so
made the Kurt Tom sound.
And I think one other thing you could talk about is one person who has writing credits on a lot of the Jimmy Go stuff is Gerald Dickerson.
Yeah, Gerald was a very, very outstanding writer and good friend of ours.
He was originally in another Chicago group, right? Well, he was one of the contributors of Soul.
That's correct.
They were one of the groups that were with you on the TAD label when you just started out, right?
Yeah.
So do you remember who the other person in the contributors of Soul was?
Charles Boyd.
Oh, okay. So, but then I guess after they broke up, Gerald became just a writer for a lot of other groups.
A lot of writing, yeah.
So he has writing credits on almost all the songs on your Jimmy Go album. And I guess it's interesting that the album didn't come out until they already released like four singles off of it.
Yeah, about four. And Gerald did quite a lot of writing on there. And also we had Marvin Yancey and
Chuck Jackson. They were in the Writer's Workshop at the time.
Exactly. And they did It's All Right, This Feeling was one of the outstanding pieces that they wrote.
Yeah, I thought... we're running low on time, and I'll definitely play that record if we get to it. I thought next I would play this record is actually my favorite record off the album. This is the last single you released off of it called Make Me Twice the Man. So, but actually, I just give it, It's All Right, This Feeling was released right after Think Before You Stop.
Right.
And then this last record was released, Make Me Twice the Man. So I'll play this record.
I'll tell you a little something about that.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll play the record, and then we'll talk about it.
Let me explain something to you. I have a love for you that's really real. I just can't help the way I feel.
Yes, I do tonight. Yes, I do tonight.
Okay, that was just the Notations with their last record on Gemigo Records from 1976. That was called Make Me Twice the Man. And I think that charted on Billboard, I have it written down, April 10th, 76, and it went up to 91, so like on the low end of the national charts. But I'm sure it got lots of local play in Chicago.
Oh, absolutely.
And, yeah, we're talking about that it had a real distinctive, like it had the sitar sound that it's like on a lot of Philly records, not on a lot of Chicago records, though. And you were telling me you had a story behind that record?
Oh, yeah. Super People, Gerald, actually, that song was actually put together for Curtis.
Oh, well not that.
Super People, but on Make Me Twice the Man, it was a song sent in amongst a lot of tapes.
Okay.
And it was sent in with the idea of us doing it by a writer and artist at that time named Van McCoy, who put out The Hustle.
Yeah, everyone heard of it.
And he sent it in with some background singers and a guy singing lead. We heard it, we liked it, and it was history. We recorded it right away.
So he was just shopping his songs around for
artists.
Exactly.
It was about 8 or 9 songs on a cassette.
Okay. I think that's one of the only ones on the album that It's All Right, This Feeling was also Van McCoy, you're saying?
Mm-mm. That was a single, too, that we had.
Oh, yeah. That came out before Make Me Twice the Man. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had mentioned that. I skipped over it because we don't have that much time, and I'll get to it at the end if we have time, for sure.
Okay.
But I guess what happened, like, Gemigo Records went out of business?
Yeah, after a period of time, Gemigo finally, Anchor Time finally dissolved. And everybody moved on.
So that was around 1976 it happened?
Yeah, 76, 77.
You don't know what the story is? I just
said, really.
Okay.
Not really.
So, and then you had one more record on Mercury Records, but before I play that, I wanted to play the Super People Sigh, which is the flip of your first Gemigo record, It Only Hurts for a Little While. So you were just saying that this song was originally intended for Curtis, is that
exactly.
right?
Exactly. It was written really for Curtis, and at the time it happened, Curtis' album was already full. He loved it, and he would have put it on, but the album was already full, ready to go. And so he just went on and told us to go on and record the song, and we did.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's almost like it's like an answer record to Superfly, almost, where he's, mm-hmm. you know, he's...
Actually, when we recorded it, we really, actually, and being honest, we really didn't complete it because if you notice, there's no background.
Okay.
Walter actually did the whole entire lead on this.
Oh, okay.
So it's really Walter in the music, and he did an excellent job.
Yeah, and I guess the reason I wanted to talk about this record also is... you guys, this specific record became very collectible in, I guess, like the late 80s, early 90s,
mm-hmm.
in, I guess, the funk rare groove scene where people collect sound, it's got a really nice kind of, I guess, Curtis Mayfield type of sound.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like this lost side that nobody remembered at the time or nobody played at the time. Became collectible much later, and everyone started looking for it, which
exactly.
is pretty interesting.
And it was also used in the HBO special with Wesley Snipes and Sanaa Lathan was used in the movie Disappearing Acts.
Okay.
About 3 years ago.
Yeah, so the song became collectible enough
exactly.
that people playing it in clubs and stuff.
Exactly.
But if it's interesting, it has a new life after that. And it actually was sampled by probably a bunch of rappers, too. So.
Yeah.
You got to be suing all those people, getting your money. Anyways, I'm going to play the record because it's a really nice record. This is the Notations with Super People.
Higher than high. Super people, you watch the
Okay, that was just the Notations from 1975 with Super People, which was a sort of a lost B-side at the time and got revived with the sort of funk rare groove dance collectors in the 90s, exactly. Especially because of the really nice guitar riff on there and those drums. It's a really nice cut. And you guys actually don't sing harmony on it, but there's places where Walter Jones' voice is doubled up.
Exactly.
On the record. So
you did a tremendous job on that piece.
Yeah. So yeah, I bet if you guys play now, maybe people want to hear that song now. So I guess right after the final record you released was right after Jemigo. You had a short lived, I guess, time on Mercury Records.
About a year.
And so you released one record on Mercury Records. So how did you get hooked up with Mercury Records? Like, what happened?
Well, again, through Emmett and some the people that he knew hooked us right in.
Okay. And you released this one record, Judy Blue Eyes, mm-hmm. but I don't think it really got promotion or play really right.
Not how it should have.
Okay.
But here in Chicago, we got very good play. We got a lot of play here.
Okay.
And a few other areas. There again, the areas that was kind of like our areas.
Okay.
But nationally, it didn't get what it should have.
Okay, so this is Judy Blue Eyes. This is from 1977. Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM. In Chicago, you're listening to a special edition of the Sitting in the Park show we're doing an interview with the Notations. I think the phone hasn't been working correctly, but if someone wants to call in the last few minutes, they can. The number is 773-702-8424. And we were just talking, that was the last record you released on, one of the last records you ever released that was on Mercury from 1977, and that was called Judy Blue Eyes. And one thing I actually wanted to talk about before we moved on to just what the group's doing now is you said you also did like a score for a TV show.
One song, yeah, that was Curtis gave us the chance to do this. He came to Gerald and myself about writing a soundtrack for, it was going to be a, I think, Channel 5 pilot.
Okay.
Godfrey Cambridge, and I can't think of the other gentleman's name at the time. And he let us read the script, and we came up with a song called Chopper Jackson, but it ended up that before everything finally went down, Godfrey Cambridge passed away, and it canceled the whole entire show, so it never did. You know, but it got added later in the years to over in Europe, and it got added to.
There was a compilation.
Right,
I think it was called.
Compilation.
I think it was called Super People or the
exactly.
Compilation, and they reissued. They found that track on the tapes and they put it out on the CD.
Yeah, it was added to that CD.
Yeah, I don't have the CD here. Plus, we're out of time, but I definitely would. Would play it. So I guess there's a whole lot of history that we're missing now because we left off in 1977, and there's over 25 years of the group since then. Although you didn't, so what happened with the group since 77?
Well, some more changes came about, and there was a time period where we laid back for a minute, and everybody was doing their own thing, and we came back together again, and that's where we are now.
So you guys reformed. At a certain time, right? Like
exactly.
Maybe in the early 90s or something? Or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Early 90s. And that's when I already knew Michael, Michael Thurman. We brought Michael in, and about a year or two later, that's when Marcus came in to the group.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And LaSalle Matthews actually passed away, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. When do you know when?
About 3 years ago.
About four years now.
Oh, okay. Well, that's sad. But the current line of the group, can you say the current members again?
We have Michael Thurman, Marcus Gentry, myself, and Bobby Thomas.
Okay. And you guys actually put out a CD like in 96, right?
Yes, that was on Sunlight Records, which is Pete Wright.
Okay.
Again, my old buddy Pete, and that was on that label. And it was called Second Time Around.
Okay. I don't... And actually, what else? Right now, you guys still do shows, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
The oldie circuit, which is still a strong market for that.
Okay. And you said you've been doing, there was like big shows in L.A., right?
We just came from L.A. in February.
Okay.
Nine-act show was really good. Barbara Mason, Billy Paul, the Intruders, Ray Goodman Brown, Evelyn Champagne Candy. It was really fun.
Yeah, I hope you guys play in Chicago sometime because I'd like to see those, see you do those records. So I guess while we're waiting, well, we still have a little bit of time left, and maybe we'll have more time to play more records because the next DJ isn't here yet. But this record I'm going to play is off of the CD you released in 1996.
Yes.
What was the title of this track again?
Baby, I Like Your Style.
Oh, okay. So here it is.
Don't you know when you touch me, she drives me wild. 'Cause over and over again, I love you. You've been better to me than a friend. I place no one above you. 'Cause baby, I like your style. Paradise, but loving you more and more. Ooh.
no matter what your friends say, you're gonna always be something special, sweet baby, my lady. Come rain or shine, you're gonna always be mine, wherever the full winds blow. Girl, I'll always love you so. I love how careless we play. That's why you're my candy cane, sweet baby, my lady. Cause baby, I like your style. Ooh, baby.
Okay, this is the end. You're listening to WHBK 88.5 FM in Chicago. This is the end of the Sitting in the Park show. I got to say a special thanks to our special guest, The Notations, for coming up here and telling their story. I really appreciate you guys coming down.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you much.
Enjoy. And so your CD, is it still available? Do you know where people can get it? Or?
No, we just re-released. It's going to be on internet.
Okay.
And it's about for cdbaby.com and a couple other spots on internet.
And I think you were talking about you're working on doing like a best of or something
exactly.
like that too. So people should definitely keep their eye out for that. And any last words that you guys wanted to say before you leave?
Well, I just would like to say thanks to everybody, all the jocks throughout the country, especially here in Chicago, that still keeps the 70s music alive. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, appreciate it.